Hello, my name is Annette Hagen and I'm a rare books curator. Jakob and Wilhelm Grimm were both born in Hesse in Germany. Towards the end of the 18th century, Jakob was the oldest of six children. He was born in 1785 and Wilhelm was born a year later. And they had three brothers and a sister. And their father was a district magistrate, so he had quite a good job who ensured the family's prosperity. But then he died very suddenly in 1796, and Jakob was only 11 and Wilhelm was only 10 years old. So within weeks, the family had to leave their large house and move to a different town to stay with the children's grandfather and their aunt. And his aunt was a lady-in-waiting for the queen, so she had quite a secure income. And then Jakob and Wilhelm started at a local secondary school, and they worked really, really hard because they wanted to fulfill their late father's expectation of becoming lawyers, basically step into his footsteps. And all this studying from the age of P6 and P7, really, up to 12 hours a day, affected Wilhelm's health. He got asthma and he got scarlet fever, and he really was rather sickly for the rest of his life. Both brothers eventually enrolled at the University of Marburg to study law. Jakob in 1802, Wilhelm in 1803. And there they were taken under the wing of Professor Friedrich Karl Savigny, and he had a profound influence on the brothers, personally and professionally, and it was he who first inspired them to explore ancient German literature and folklore. So really their interest in the fairy tales was aroused during their university education. Now in 1806, Jakob gave up his law studies. He really wanted to try and earn a living as a scholar of literature and language. And 2 years later, he did get a job as a librarian. He's getting there. Wilhelm was more careful. He did actually do his full law degree. But that didn't stop him gathering folk tales along with Jakob. And there was another guy called Clemens von Brentano, a poet and scholar, and he asked him to help him collect oral tales for use in a volume of German folk literature that he was intending to publish. And their collecting work became more systematic after that. They started off by selecting tales from old books in libraries, and then they moved on to asking friends and family if they knew any stories. But they never ever went out and did field work. Well, that interest in folk and fairy tales is really part of a much wider movement, the Romantic movement. It's got nothing to do with romance. And that is usually dated from sort of late 18th century to about the middle of the 19th century. So the Grimm brothers fell right into the middle of that. And part of this movement, as I said, it was much wider, elevated folk literature, folk customs, folklore to a much higher status than it had enjoyed before, and actually made it worthy of scholarly exploration. And the Grimms were only two of a whole load of scholars who aimed to uncover what they call the natural poetry of the German common people. And they tried to do this by looking at legends and epics, poems and tales. And basically, they hoped to find some kind of essential truth about German cultural heritage in these tales, especially if they came straight from the common people themselves, who had not falsified anything. These tales were actually primarily aimed at adult scholars. The first edition actually had scholarly annotations, and later on they even published a separate volume just with scholarly notes. Didn't sell very well, but it's a different story. And right from the start, from when they were first published, people asked the question, who were they intended for? Because the original versions of the tales contained lots of motifs that were clearly not very child-friendly, such as acts of cruelty and betrayal, and maybe the narrative wasn't always straightforward and easy for children to follow. And on the other hand, critics said, again, from the start, that stories of witches and talking animals and magic do not exactly present adult entertainment. Well, I think the solution lies somewhere in the fact that the Grimms collected the fairy tales primarily for an academic purpose, and they were not meant as a form of entertainment for anybody, neither for children nor for adults. Over time, of course, this attitude changed, and while the Grimms were adding more and more stories to later editions, they also started editing the stories they had already published and made them increasingly child-friendly. And at the end of this long process, we get the sanitized Disney versions that you all know. Well, I actually looked up a couple of definitions because I was interested. Most obvious one is the Oxford English Dictionary, and that defines fairy tale as a tale about fairies, or about a strange incident or coincidence or marvellous progress, really just an unreal or incredible story or fabrication. And then I thought I'll also have a look in Grimm's German Dictionary, because the brothers actually started putting together a dictionary of the German language in 1854. Took 100 years to finish. They got to F. But of course, fairy tale in German is Märchen. Starts with M, and they didn't write that because they were long dead. But in there, it's defined as a tale composed with poetic fantasy, in particular, a tale from the world of magic. So more or less the same as the Oxford English Dictionary. And to me, I think the essential elements of a fairy tale are fantastic or magical creatures and also powers. Improbable situations where a hero or a heroine has to perform impossible tasks, and most importantly, there's always a happy end. A huge amount of fairy tales are actually international. And as far as the Grimms are concerned, a lot of the tales that they collected come from the daughters of two particular noble families in Hesse. But they had a Huguenot or a French background, and so do the tales that they contributed. But the Grimms were completely unaware of that. It's later scholarship that has proved it. So a lot of fairy tales are actually international, and they just come in sort of national guises. Names get changed. One example is, for instance, Tom Thumb. In Britain, it was always thought to be of English origin. In the Grimms, it's called the Däumling. But it looks as if the original comes from Scandinavia. So it's very difficult to say if there's anything distinctive about the Grimm's tales. There might be forests in it, but then you get forests in Scandinavia. There are some set at the seaside, but then there's two coasts in Germany. So I don't think there's anything that would make them distinctly Grimm tales. As to my own personal interests, I didn't have any in fairy tales to start with. Like most people my age, I knew the Grimm's fairy tales from a young age, but I can't even remember whether my granny told me them or whether I read them myself. I suppose probably a bit of both. Oh, I've always liked Hänsel and Gretel. I think probably because of the gingerbread house that held all sorts of promises in my mind. And the setting in the dark forest was quite deliciously scary too, as far as I remember. And then there's one called Little Brother and Little Sister, and the brother is turned into a deer. And there's some scene towards the end of it where there's a steam-filled bathroom that gets hotter and hotter. I have a vague memory of that. And two other tales also stick particularly in my memory because my brother and I had an LP with them on it. One was Joringel and Jorinde, and the other one was The Blue Light. And the narrator in The Blue Light had a really, really scary voice. And I clearly remember being frightened when I listened to him. Still hear him saying this phrase, ein Fuder Holzspalten, which means to chop a cartload of wood. But I didn't know the word Fuder, and I had all sorts of scary ideas what it meant. And actually, I think it's just dawned on me that the frightening tales are the ones that come to my mind first. It's maybe because I wasn't confronted with the Disney versions when I was young. I don't know. I think fairy tales are timeless because I simply said once upon a time. So in a sense, they don't get dated or old-fashioned. They always have been. And they also fire up children's imagination when the kids try to picture a witch or an evil queen or a talking frog or something like that. And the very structure of the fairy tale makes it easy to remember them. So children can then go and act them out as drama instead of just listening passively. And I mean, honestly, which little girl doesn't want to be a princess taken away by some beautiful prince? And I think maybe the appeal also has to do with this combination of the impossible situation, the magic elements, and the happy end. It's all very appealing, isn't it? Personally, I think it's useful for children, certainly, to have access to traditional fairy tales. They are still inspiring. I think they arouse the fantasy, and that can only be a good thing. And many of them are also quite didactic and in a playful sort of indirect way warn children, for instance, not to stray alone into a forest, or not to be cruel to animals, stuff like that. And on a different level, I also think it's important not to just throw out old stuff when new things hit the market. We don't always need to start from scratch. And really, to be able to tap into what our grandparents and great-grandparents and even earlier generations were inspired by can actually be quite a privilege.